Welcome to Kubus, welcome to GPN. Today's talk is by, Dysphoric Unicorn. They are hacking with Kubernetes and stuff, and in their free time they are interested in games and how they manipulate us, and that's something they will talk to us about now. Please have a warm welcome, Dysphoric Unicorn.
Yeah, thank you very much. Exactly, I'm here today to talk to you about how games and, by extension, chore apps, which are kind of gamified, but not really games, keep you on longer and coming back regularly. First of all, who am I? I'm a tech worker outside of the games industry. The only app that I've made that is being used productively connects electric vehicle charge stations to a credit card terminal. So I'm very far away from this industry, from the games and chore apps industry professionally, but I've always wanted to do games. I've always been interested in that. I do take part in game jams from time to time. And yeah, I am diagnosed with ADHD, as probably most people here, which makes me very susceptible to addiction. So I have to be very careful around things that can be addictive, which can be a problem considering games are one of my favorite hobbies, and yeah. Goals for this talk, I don't actually want to completely judge everything that I am talking about here. Some of these things just make the games more fun, make them more engaging, or with a chore app, they might motivate you to do something that you do want to do, but you also kind of don't want to do, like learning a language. I just want you to notice and understand what is done and make an informed decision on if you want these things to work on you. So, let's just jump right into the methods used for this. First of all, well-timed rewards. That's like the very basic one that most games do. You give out awards like achievements, points, experience, rubber balls, whatever. Always in irregular intervals to keep players engaged, keep the dopamine flowing. But the thing where it gets a bit icky, maybe, to some, is that your goal is to never give them exactly what they want. If you want to make someone play more, you always want to give them slightly less. So always keep them slightly unfulfilled. And keep it unpredictable, because if the player knows when they're going to be receiving a reward, the actual the effect of it will be less. They should expect an award, but they should not always get it when they expect it, to have this as effective as possible. I know I'm sounding like I'm giving a guide here. That's not what I'm here for, but yeah, just from the perspective of someone who wants to make a very engaging, very gripping game or chore app. Also, another thing a lot of games do is anticipate when players want to end the session and then give them a reward that they can only use within the next 15 minutes. So just keep them on for 15 minutes longer. For example, Counter-Strike Global Offensive, I know that game is no longer playable, but it's what I wasted most of my youth on, will drop random loot boxes or skin drops at the end of games, or would. I don't actually know how Counter-Strike 2 does it, because I don't have a computer that can run it. They cost money, but they can also be to open, but they can be sold for Steam credits that you could theoretically use to buy more games. There's also, in addition to these boxes, the not really transparent ELO ranking system, where if you play competitively, you will want to have a higher rank, because that, well, gives you some kind of prestige, but you don't really understand how these ranks are calculated. Rank ups can very much engage people to continue playing. Yeah, finally, I made it out of silver. While rank downs, oh shit, I'm back to silver. I really have to keep playing, so I'm back to gold again. There were also time quests to unlock medals and loot boxes that worked in a similar manner. Then also, the other side, Duolingo, which does a lot of these things, but they kind of fail in the way of they make it too predictable. Because you will always get a 15-minute XP boost when you finish a set of lessons. They are always grouped like 5 lessons in one. You get a 15-minute XP boost for that. You always get a 15-minute XP boost for finishing the last daily quest. There's always 3 daily quests, and the third one of them will give you a 15-minute XP boost. And these are generally situations where people might want to stop playing because or stop using the app because, yeah, I've done my daily quests, but then they get the 15-minute XP boost, so they continue playing. For me personally, it has the effect that I will always keep my batches of lessons. I will always do them except the last one. So the next time I play, I can just start with the last one and then instantly have an XP boost. So I'm kind of gaming the system that's trying to game me because they have kept it too predictable for me to for it to work as much as it could. There's also a 30-minute XP boost given when finishing a Friends or Family quest that you can, though, select when you use that. So I tend to forget to just use it. And also, when you finish a bunch of lessons, it will give you a pop-up to tell you about these special lessons that give more XP but don't progress you in the game. So, yeah, if you care about the XP, you might switch to that, and yeah, that will keep you on longer. Another thing is collaboration, with generally, it's a very good thing, so definitely not something to be judged outright. However, if you have players do tasks with others and create social groups that rely on one another to complete these tasks, it can create a lot of pressure to continue playing, to log in every day, to help your guilds or whatever complete their objectives. Of course, massive multiplayer online games are the biggest example here. They always have like raids or very big reward missions that take a while to do, where you need a certain amount of other players to do that, so that you are relying on each other and that you kind of motivate each other to keep playing. Also, in Counter-Strike, the matchmaking system made it impossible to really have fun playing the game if you don't have a lobby of 5 people together. Which meant that you had to have the social group of people playing the game together, and that also created a lot of pressure to actually log in every day, speaking from my personal experience here. And Duolingo has these weekly family quests were just introduced. If you have a shared account where you only pay like less than if everyone paid for the professional version, then you have a quest that everyone in your family group can progress on together. And of course, this also creates some, like, if I don't do my part of that during this week, we might fail, and then it would ruin their friend quest streak, and you don't want that, so it creates pressure. On the other hand, another social thing is competitiveness, like comparing player performance, especially like having a friends leaderboard, like you've done so much better than your best friend this week, can be very motivating to put more time in than you were planning to do. And another thing is giving out global or local numbered rankings. So there's like a, you are the player 2,000 in the world, or in your city, you're player number 2, second best person in your city. Shoot Mania Storm is a game that did that. Probably no one here remembers it because it kind of died. Oh, you do. That's awesome. I love that game so much. I was really high ranked in that game, and it kept me so motivated because I, like, you could imagine all of the people who are ranked lower than you, and like, wow. It's really motivating. Again, we have the non-transparent ELO rating in Counter-Strike and many other games. Then there's also just games that increase your rank with a certain amount of XP, while this doesn't really help you to compare yourself against others because your performance doesn't actually matter how many XP you get. It's mostly how much time you put in. But still, if you have the higher rank, it seems like you're the more proficient player. And then also Duolingo has leagues, where you every week, if you're very good, you can rise to the next league, or if you're one of the bottom 10 people in the league you got matched with, you downrank, and it also keeps track of how long you've been in a certain league. And yeah, I'm very motivated to never drop out of the Diamond League because of this system. Another thing a lot of games are doing are moving goalposts. Never leaving the player without something to strive for. Also, increasing difficulty as the player gets better or gets better gear. And in addition to that, also always having multiple types of goals, and if you fulfill one of them, you will always get a new one to do. So short term would be acquiring a certain item of gear, mid term is finishing some quest line, and the long term would save the world on many games. Probably not in Duolingo, but who knows. So yeah, virtually every RPG ever scales the difficulty with gear and skill needed to reach certain areas. Many also scale the enemy levels with your current level. So you will, even if you go back to an early area, it will suddenly be much more difficult. Driving games do an interesting thing where the if the player gets too far ahead, the other cars kind of rubber band gets much faster than it could technically go, just so the player still is engaged and there's a risk of failing if you fall out. On Duolingo, we have quests that get more difficult as users complete more in a row. So you have the monthly quest, for example, where you have to do a certain amount of things. And if you've done a bunch of monthly quests in a row, you will have to do much more things every time. But if you fail one, it automatically resets and makes them really easy. So usually, if you don't log in for a day, you have a streak freeze, so you don't instantly lose your streak of how many days you've learned. And then the next day, it will just be complete one lesson will be one of your quests for the day. That instantly gives you some kind of gratification. Yeah, I'm back in. I'm going to continue doing this now. Speaking of, login rewards are rewards that players get for logging in after a certain set amount of real-world time has passed. Most common are daily rewards, but there's also weekly, monthly, whatever. They are often unlocks that you cannot get through playing alone. And the goal of this is, of course, to get players to have your game part of the daily routine of the player. So they have a certain time slot in the day where they will start playing your game without even thinking about it. One big example here would be Animal Crossing New Horizons, which has the daily quests, the daily login rewards, and the fruit trees that produce fruit once a day. And you can also have a money tree and a bunch of stuff that you can always do once a day. And Duolingo, yeah, it has that streak counter that tracks how long you've been using it daily. But they do a really smart thing with those streak freezes, because if I'm sick and I don't manage to log in, I don't instantly lose my 375-day streak, because if I did, that would be incredibly demotivating. So they freeze it then for a certain set amount of days that increases with your streak. So you can miss some days, but you generally don't want to. Also, Duolingo has free daily quests that give you diamonds, which is a currency you can only get through them or through spending real money. Another thing Duolingo was very big on a couple years ago, but they kind of went back on, is guilt tripping, like notifications with emotional appeals when players haven't opened it in a while, or a negative reaction to players not logging in for a while. Biggest example here is Animal Crossing. I stopped playing Animal Crossing 2 years ago because I didn't log in for a week and I didn't want to have the negative reactions from my villagers to me not having logged in for a week. They are sad, and your city becomes overgrown with weeds, and there's cockroaches in your room that you have to step on, and scary sound effects, and your hair is messy. It's really a lot of guilt tripping that this game does. In Duolingo, the virtual characters are sad when you don't extend their streak, but honestly, they've really decreased the pressure that they're trying to put on players through guilt tripping. Very, very big thing always is fear of missing out. That's something that a lot of these titles are working with a lot. Like, have in-game missions only available for a short, real-world time frame. Show players which unlocks they are still missing from an event, like, hey, it's the summer event and you still don't have this and this and this. And then you can be a bit evil even and do it completely random what you get from the event. So you might have 15 times the same thing, but you're still lacking one thing that is a rare drop. And it will be kind of, at least if you're susceptible to it, it will create a lot of pressure to get that last thing, because otherwise your collection is incomplete. Another thing, only selling a game for a short amount of time. I don't get it, why they did that, but it's one example. Or shutting down games once the player base shrinks or secrets release. That's not really, that's more a capitalist, like, we are trying to not spend money on something that's not generating money for us. But also, like, if I know the game is going to be shut down at some point, I might spend more time on it while I know it's there. Examples for fear of missing out would be the Pokemon games, the newer ones. They have raids, which are like special, very difficult battles that you have to do with random people from the internet. And they are only available with like certain Pokemon you can't get otherwise except through trading. And they're only like for a couple of weeks. Also, there's mystery gifts from time to time that give out legendary Pokemon or items that you can't get otherwise. In my opinion, it's still better than having people drive to a GameStop in Japan to get whatever rare Pokemon that you can't get otherwise, but still, it's definitely playing with the fear of missing out of players. Overwatch 1, notably, 2 doesn't have loot boxes anymore, and I haven't played it enough to know what exactly they are doing. I didn't like the sequel. But yeah, they had event loot boxes containing special skins, and they had a collection of what you've got from this event. One thing, at least, that they did, which made it a little less bad, was that the events tended to repeat every year. So they did a Summer Games event, and then even though there wasn't an Olympic Summer Games in the next year, they just repeated the event, so you had a chance to complete your collection afterwards. But I'm also not sure if they communicated that beforehand, so yeah. They did that. Also, Overwatch shut down once Overwatch 2 released, which means I have a bunch of useless Blu-ray discs now. yeah, it's kind of a shame. Then there was Super Mario Bros. 35, which was a really fun thing, which was like 35 people playing the same level of Mario at the same time, and it was like a Battle Royale, but Mario. Shut down after 6 months. You cannot play it anymore, which is a real shame. I hope there's some open source re-implementation around, but I don't know. Also, there was Super Mario 3D All-Stars, which they stopped selling after half a year. You can now get it for a very inflated price point from people who bought a bunch of copies, but otherwise you cannot get that game anymore. So, yeah, that created a lot of fear of missing out. And right now they also had a thing with Nest Championships game that you could also only pre-order for a very short amount of time. Also, there's in Animal Crossing, there's in-game events tied to reward holidays, and if you don't check in during that day, you will miss that. Then, kind of the stronger variety of fear of missing out is if you have timed real currency purchases, which are like battle passes or something. They unlock tasks that you can do within a set amount of time, and afterwards you can't do them anymore and your money is essentially gone, because then you would have to buy the next battle pass. And yeah, that causes a lot of fear of missing out, and also like a bit of place with lost cost fallacy, because even if you're not really having fun anymore, you just spend $20 on that battle pass and you really want to unlock the things that are in there. Yeah. Like every modern shooter does this, I think. CSGO had a similar thing with operations, and at least the maps there were available to everyone, but there were missions and special play modes that you could only play during that operation if you had spent money on it. And you got a little medal on your profile, and people could see that you've done a set amount of missions during that real world event. So, I've listed a bunch of stuff. What now? Just try to be on the lookout for these techniques. Make an educated decision if you want that to work on you, or if you're really susceptible to it, just avoid titles that use these. Understand how you're using your time, and really, stop playing if you're not having fun, and stop playing if you don't consciously decide that you want to play. If it's just something you do because you do it, it's no longer what you were set out to do.
And if you have kids, talk to them about this stuff. They are much more susceptible than adults are. And don't give them your credit card number. They keep being like news articles about that. Kids should not have credit cards. Okay, thank you all for listening. I hope you have a wonderful remaining event. And yeah.